This morning we are continuing our study of the book of John, Jesus' words in John's Gospel, John chapter 18, if you would like to turn there. As we continue this series of lessons, I do want to note that I will be certainly very glad when the summer is over. And the main reason is because of the oppressive temperatures. It's supposed to get up to about 107 to 109 degrees today, depending on which form you look at. So it's very, very warm. It's a little bit warm in here, although many of you may be very comfortable with that. But I noticed that it's not quite keeping up. We're grateful for the fact that you've come to be with us, especially since we have so many who are out of town and ill at this particular time. Just a couple that you may not be aware of. I wanted to note that Sister Brittany Galbraith apparently posted, and then maybe took down, or I haven't found it yet, that she had had a fall and hit her head and went to the ER for yesterday, and she has a bad headache. She's going to be fine, doing okay, but she just wasn't feeling well this morning. So please keep her in your prayers, and I'll try to verify that 100%. I got that from my wife, who said, "Have you seen yet?" And then I went to look and see on Facebook. Couldn't find it anywhere, but she saw it somewhere. Also, as I was looking on Brittany's page, Tom Roberts, preacher, used to preach here at Westside and is now at Mansfield. He is getting fairly elderly and older age, and he had another fall on Friday. He broke his hip as a result of it. He's in the hospital. He had a screw put into his hip, and he's in good spirits and doing well, but we want to keep Tom in our prayers as well. We'll also note that Luca has a temperature this morning. That's why Rachel is not here. My wife and Laura are both out of town. We may have others that are out of town as well. So we're a bit light to start off with, but we will benefit greatly from the worship and hope from what I have to share with you today as we continue talking about the words of Jesus. And it is an interesting thing when you get into John chapter 18. We read in verses 1 through 11 about Jesus' betrayal and arrest in Gethsemane and the few things that he had to say in response to those who sought to arrest him and the betrayal of Judas and other things. It was an arrest that Jesus had prepared for. He was ready to endure. You may remember that Peter struck with a sword and cut off the ear of one of the detachment, a servant of the high priest. His name was Malchus. And when Jesus saw that, he restored the ear, we are told, and said, "Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?" That's John chapter 18 and verse 11 of the text. So Jesus was in control throughout all of this. These are things that Jesus intended during his Galilean ministry when it was not yet time for him to suffer and to be arrested. He avoided it. He was very capable of removing himself, of protecting himself as well as his disciples while he was with them on earth. But now the time has come in Jerusalem to be arrested and to finish the work that God had given him to do. And that's what we're talking about in this series. Now, his teaching and his in parables and other things, the primary teaching that we have been studying throughout our study of the Gospel of John is pretty much finished. There are things that we can learn from in Jesus' words as he interacts near the time of his death. But I do want to note that beginning with verse 12 and going through verse 14, that there was nothing that was said by Jesus. It was that the detachment of troops, they arrested Jesus, bound him, and led him away to Annas, and then to Caiaphas. Annas was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, or the father of Caiaphas. He was the father-in-law of Caiaphas. And he was not the high priest, though he was a former high priest. And just as it is today with our presidents, we continue to call them president. We give them respect that they deserve from the office, even if they're no longer serving in that capacity. But Ananias is the one who questioned him first. And we'll actually note that in verses 19 through 24 in just a few moments. We will not be discussing in this series the questioning of Caiaphas, the high priest, and the things that happened on that occasion, simply because John doesn't cover it. It is covered in other Gospels. And after the time that was spent in Caiaphas' house overnight. The next morning he was taken to Pilate, and that's what we're going to discuss next week. But I do want to note that the next words that Jesus actually spoke was before the high priest Annas. This is recorded there beginning in verse 19 and going down through verse 24 of the text that we're going to be discussing today. After Jesus' arrest, Peter followed him at a distance. We are told in verses 15 through 18 that he denied Jesus as Jesus had predicted earlier. Now, the recording of that is found in Matthew 26 in verse 33. Peter answered and said to Jesus, "If all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble." And Jesus said to him, "Assuredly, I say to you that this night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." And although that prophecy of Jesus is not recorded by the disciple John in this gospel, there are mentions of those three denials in verse 17 of the text. "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" And he said, "I am not." And then later in verses 25 through 27, the last two denials of Peter are mentioned as well by John. So this was a significant event, but one that did not, in John's gospel, use the words of Jesus in response. Jesus looked at him, and you could possibly imagine the reproval, the concern, the disappointment in the eyes of John. We are told that Peter wept bitterly because of his betrayal on that occasion, though we should not judge him too harshly, because he, among all of the disciples, was the one who followed Jesus at a distance when the others forsook him and fled. So no words of Jesus are recorded in verses 12 through 18 of the text. But we do have certain things that were said in verses 19 through 24. I would like you to read with me to begin our discussion together today. Verse 19, going down through verse 24. We are told the high priest, and again this is Annas, who was a former high priest, who was not serving in that capacity at this time. So this is an honorary term in that he had served at one point. The high priest asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Now consider that for a few moments. Annas asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. It is an indication of influence, of perhaps knowledge of who remained, that he asked about the disciples, what his doctrines were, and how they might in some way cause problems or harms for the nation of Israel. But Jesus answered him by saying in verse 20, "I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet, and in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." There is a significance in the response that Jesus gives on this occasion. But I do want you to note that it was not well received. We're told that when he said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" And Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil, but if well, why do you strike me?" And then we are told that Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas the high priest. And then in the next section, we are told, after the denials in verses 25 through 27, we are told in verse 28, they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium. It was early morning. And so we'll talk a little bit about that next week. But there are two things that were mentioned in this section. First of all, Jesus' defense of himself, and that the words that he spoke were public. And then second, that Jesus had done nothing wrong in this regard. So let's do note a couple of things about this. First of all, the high priest Annas had asked Jesus about the disciples and about the doctrine. And his desire at this particular time, because this was not the primary trial, the official trial of Jesus, which was held by Caiaphas before they took him to Pilate, by the Jews. What Annas was doing was fishing for information with which to accuse him or cause him harm, and to determine the extent of his influence in things that he might have said. In other words, it was to have Jesus self-incriminate himself. Self-incriminate. I don't have to put the himself on the end. But and that was the desire of Annas on this particular occasion. But it is noted that Jesus did not give a defense of his disciples or of his doctrine on this occasion. He always taught in the synagogue or in the temple itself. The synagogues, of course, we are told throughout his ministry in Galilee and as he came to Jerusalem, that on the Sabbath day he would teach in the synagogue. Teach in the synagogue, not just on the Sabbath, but daily. That was where he made his teaching known. In Matthew 26 and verse 55, within the time that he had entered into Jerusalem, we are told he spent his nights in the Garden of Gethsemane, which is why, as we have noted, Judas knew to take the detachment there to betray Jesus. But during the day, he sat daily with them in the temple. This is described in Matthew 26 and verse 55, teaching in the temple. In other words, there was nothing that was not known generally about Jesus. The aspect of his word openly here is, I think, significant. Jesus wasn't trying to hide anything. He was not being ambiguous. The word is parousia, and it means frank, unambiguous, open, and public. What Jesus did not show any guile. It did not show any deceit. When we look at the life of Jesus, from all that he did and all that he said, from the beginning of his life until his death, there was no sin that was found in him. He was a righteous man. He was an honest man. And of course, the Apostle Peter alluded to this in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21 when he talks about Christ to be our example that we should follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him, to God, who judges righteously, who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sins, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. Now, I think this is an application that we can make in our lesson today that is especially important in light of Jesus' words. And that is, as Jesus was honest, without guile, without deceit, he always conducted himself in a manner that was above board, that is the way that we as Christians should act as well. In verse 20 of this text, he says that in secret, I have said nothing. And so as we consider that principle that should be present in every Christian, we can say that our word should be good. And in and of itself, on every occasion, there should be no deceit or guile found in us as well. Let me give you a couple of examples. First of all, in Proverbs chapter 12, I know this is an Old Testament scripture, but I've been studying through the book of Proverbs for the Thursday class, and so if you will, bear with me. In chapter 12 and verse 22, we are told that lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. I want you to think about that. Lying lips are lips that God does not appreciate, that God is revolted by. It is an abomination to him. But those who deal truthfully are his delight. Now that has not changed with the change of covenant. God has not changed. He feels the same toward lying as he has always felt toward lying. It is indeed an abomination. Another example, these are found in the New Testament, or 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 21. 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 21. Now, Paul here is explaining to the Corinthians how he was going to deal with the monies that they had gathered together to contribute to the Judean saints during their problems, their famine in Judea. And in acting honorably regarding the saints' contribution, he said that he would provide honorable things not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. So it was important that he act with integrity, that he act with honesty, that he does everything so that there will not be any questions about his integrity. Note that it was not that he did good, but he wanted to establish what things he would do in such a way as to where it could be seen as being good, seen as being honorable, seen as having integrity. In Colossians chapter 3, and verses 9 through 10, simple exhortations that are given to Colossians: do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds and have put on the new man, who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him. And so as we use Christ as our example, who of course did the will of God, who is as God is, the two are one, then we need to recognize that a part of being a Christian, of being a new disciple of Christ rather than the old, is that we do not lie, that we tell the truth. And then there is one other. These from the words of Jesus himself in Matthew 5 and verse 37, when it said, "Let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one." One thing that I have noticed probably over the past 30 years or maybe more as an adult is how politicians parse things. And what I mean by that is they try to state it in such a way as to be accepted. They try to rationalize. They try to word it in ways. The one that comes to my mind just recently is how one of the president's statements was, "I haven't talked about it, I haven't talked about it, I haven't talked about it," was changed to, "I haven't done business with," by the secretary, or not the secretary, but the press secretary of the White House. It's a parsing. And that's not characteristic just of that individual. I could give you examples from here all the way back to it just depends upon what the word is way back during Clinton's time. And we could find all sorts, both Democrats and Republicans, who do the very same thing. Notice the contrast between that and the importance of having lawyers to represent and all of these kinds of things of what is being done with what Jesus is saying should be characteristic of a disciple. My yes means yes. My no means no. And to try to equivocate in some way, or to try to hide it in some way, or try to obfuscate, that is something that is from the evil one. It's something that we as Christians should recognize. And therefore, the way to determine Jesus' behavior and doctrine, as he stated here, it was not to try to listen to what he was going to say, because he had already said it all. His yes was yes, his no was no. And if truth was told by other individuals, Jesus' innocence is something that would be evident. Now, it wasn't evident. I'd say it probably still was, but it wasn't accepted by the Jews on this particular occasion, because they found individuals who blasphemed against Jesus and bore false witness against him. And as we said before, just by what Jesus said right there, it was unacceptable to some. It was a direct statement of honesty, and yet it was deemed disrespectful because of an evil individual who had no respect for Jesus, who considered Jesus merely a prisoner, who didn't want Jesus to be able to defend himself, and so he struck him forcibly on the face as a result of what he had to say. In Matthew chapter 27 and verse 25, when this all came to a head and Jesus stood before Pilate, and Pilate said, "I found no evil in this man," and deigned to let him go, but he feared the people, the Jewish people. He wanted to give them a favor. And so when they cried out, this is the words that they used, which convinced him to crucify Jesus. "All the people answered and said, 'His blood be on us and on our children.' And he released Barabbas to them. When he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified." That's in Matthew 27 in verses 25 and 26 of the text. So, in this particular case, they were responsible, but it is because they were unwilling to accept the truth that Jesus did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. They had been convinced by the Jewish leaders that he was guilty of blasphemy. "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. If well, then why do you strike me?" The man said, "Why do you answer the high priest like that?" These are false accusations. There was nothing that was disrespectful or wrong about what Jesus had said. No defense would have satisfied this wicked officer. A true trial would have had witnesses, but there were no trials here. This was, in every sense, a kangaroo court. They were just trying to get dirt on Jesus. But it was also, again, as I said, preliminary, because anything he stated here would have been used against him. Annas sent him to Caiaphas for his real trial. And so that's basically what I wanted to share with you in the lesson this morning. There's not much that is said by Jesus with these words, but I do think that the application that we alluded to at the beginning of our time together is very important. Again, after these words, the narrative returns to Peter's denials. We have no words from Jesus, and then John picks up with the Roman governor Pilate, which we'll address next week. But until then, I want you to remember the primary lesson of this address, and that is the honest way that Jesus spoke, the integrity that was present in Jesus, and how strongly that contrasted with those who held him at this time, whether it be from his private arrest because they feared the people, because they didn't want to stir up the people, and so they arrested him secretly, to these kangaroo trials that went on where everything that Jesus said was held against him, whether true or not. And so as Christians, understanding these things, we need to remember how important it is for us to be honest in our dealings. Jesus serves as a wonderful example of honesty and integrity that we need to emulate. And there are any number of passages that we've alluded to already which establish that truth. I want to share with you one final one in Titus chapter 2. This is specifically an instruction given to the young men because it is characteristically needed by young men, but it certainly applies to all of us. Titus was told by Paul to exhort the young men to be sober-minded. This is in verses 6 through 8 of Titus chapter 2. To in all things show yourself to be a pattern of good works in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that no one who is an opponent, or that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. And so again, why are you opposing this individual? Well, because. There is no because if a Christian is acting the way a Christian should act. Now, that doesn't mean that you will always be well treated. In this particular case, the opponent being ashamed does not indicate that the opponent does not still oppose you, or that the opponent may say evil things about you. But the shame comes because those evil things that he may claim, those accusations that he may raise, are false. They are not true, and there is a reason for shame in that regard. That was certainly the case with Jesus. Jesus had done nothing wrong throughout the entirety of his life. He had come to this earth to save the world, and now he was being rejected by his own countrymen. But he willingly gave himself up. He died on the cross, fulfilling the will of God that we might be saved. And so we offer an invitation at this time, not knowing the hearts of any. It may be that you have an opportunity this morning to respond and get your life right with the Lord, to obey the gospel of our Lord. If that is a need, we offer the opportunity to you today. Whatever your need may be, we ask that you come forward while together we stand and while we sing the song selected.